Personally, the only problems that I have with the broadcast is always the reception. The signal is mostly very weak in Central Europe, hard to receive, and sometimes it's not so audible and understandable. Other than that, I have no problems with anything, really. If you would like to hear more or if you have any questions, feel free to contact me. Salam and warm greetings to you, Alexandra Bogdanova from Slovakia, and many thanks for writing such a nice email to your radio station, IRIB English Radio. We are so glad that you enjoy our programs and you enjoy our broadcast, because you said you found the programs of IRIB English Radio professional and very informative. Thank you again for reflecting your views about our broadcast. It seems that you like IRIB English Radio talk more about regional things like culture, music, food and history and politics more. Thank you very much for telling us your views and about the problem you had with the reception. You said the reception and the signal is very weak in Central Europe. Yes, of course, my colleagues, I will inform my colleagues about this problem, and they will soon fix the problem. And nothing is left except expressing our warm gratitudes to you, Alexandra Bogdanova from Slovakia, for writing such a nice email to your radio station, IRIB English Radio. Alexandra Bogdanova, write to us soon. We are looking forward to hearing from you soon. So, after a short break, I will be back with an email from Harald Suss from Austria, one of our regular listeners. Stay with us, please. Welcome back. This email that I'm reviewing is from Austria, from Harald Suss. Let's see, Harald, one of our old and regular listeners, says, "Thank you for contacting me as a listener of IRIB. I listen to IRIB English Radio since a very long time ago. I began radio listening in 1975. I remember I received my first QSL card from IRIB in 1985. I like to listen in to foreign radio stations to learn about the culture in these countries, one of Iran. It is a pity that I never could travel to Iran. I hope I will get a chance to do it. Your programs are quite interesting, even for a person like me who is not quite familiar with the politics. Please continue broadcasting in English and show us your country virtually. I also collect QSL cards, and so I sometimes send you my reception reports. I will continue to follow your broadcast if I get some time to do it. I wish you and all the team the best in your work and in your life. Salam and warmest greetings to you, Harald Suss from Austria, and thank you very much for sending us this great, great email. We are so happy that our listeners reflect their views about our broadcast, so we can better the quality of our programs when we hear your views about our broadcast. So it seems that you've been listening to different radio stations, different foreign radio stations since a very long time ago. As you said, 1979. Yes, it's a very long time ago. So you received your first QSL card from IRIB English Radio in 1985. That's great. That's amazing that you've been keeping it and you've been remembering it. It shows your commitment and your faithfulness to IRIB English Radio, your loyalty. And that's great. It made my day, actually. You like to hear more about the culture of Iran and the interesting programs alike. Okay, I will inform my colleagues about that. Thank you again for sending us this great email. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card, because as before that, we sent our great listeners paper QSL cards and the souvenirs. in the time of pandemic, it's not possible. So please, in this time, in the time of pandemic, accept our electronic QSL card. Haraltz is from Austria. Many thanks for sending us this great email. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. So let's see, what is the next email? This email is from Finland, from Sixten Niman. Let's see what Sixten says. Dear sir or madam, first, I hope you are COVID-19 safe. I had a great pleasure to pick up your radio here in Nikralbi, Finland, on 936 kilohertz medium wave. The reception was fairly good. I am enclosing an audio clip of my reception. Nikralbi is a small town on the west coast of Finland, about 500 kilometers north of Helsinki. I would be very glad and honored to receive a verification of reception. I thank you very much in advance. Best regards. Salam and warm greetings to you, Sixten Niman from Finland. And many thanks for sending us this email. So you had the chance to pick up IRIB English Radio in your region. As you said, your region is Nikralbi, Finland. That's great that our signals are heard in your region, in Nikralbi, Finland. It's good. And you said the reception was fairly good, and that's great. Sixten Niman from Finland, why don't you tell us your opinion about our broadcast? In the upcoming emails, we are waiting for them. So we are honored to have received this email from you, Sixten Niman from Finland. We wish you all the best. Yes, hopefully and fortunately, most of the people in Iran are COVID-19 safe, because the majority of the Iranians have received the booster dose of COVID-19 vaccine. Thank you very much for sending us this email, Sixten Niman from Finland. Write to us soon. We are looking forward to hearing from you. And after a short break, I will be back with the last email. Welcome back. Alan Willey, one of our regular listeners from Canada, has sent us an email. Let's see what Alan says. Dear staff, please find attached with this email another set of reception reports of IRIB English radio broadcast during the past month. Also, I appreciate your previous mention in correspondence of the possibility of taking part in a possible interview. I hope I can also participate in an interview with you very soon. By the way, I've just enjoyed listening to your listener program today. Listeners special, I mean Alan Means. And I enjoyed hearing your listeners' comments a lot. Thank you very much for your consideration and kindest regards. Salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, Iran, and IRIB English Radio to you, Alan Willey, in Canada. Thank you very much for writing this email to us. So you are a volunteer in participating in a possible interview, and that's great. My colleagues will soon tell you the time of it. So Alan Willey from Canada, my colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card as a confirmation. And it seems that you listened to listeners special last time and you enjoyed. That's great. Write to us soon, Alan Willey from Canada. Dear listeners of Listeners Special, the Sunday program, before we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special, again, I offer my heartfelt condolences to you on the martyrdom anniversary of the Prophet's seventh infallible heir, Imam Musa Kazem, peace upon him. Many thanks for being with us, and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to englishradio@irib.ir. That is one word, englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pastoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pastodayenglish. Thank you all.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Dear listeners, hello everyone. Welcome to another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and in this edition, we will try to have a closer look at the 25th chapter, Surah Al-Furqan. First, let's just listen to the verses we're going to talk about in this program, and we'll be back shortly. So stay with us.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
In the name of Allah, the absolutely merciful, the especially merciful.
وَيَوْمَ يَعَضُّ الظَّالِمُ عَلَى يَدَيْهِ يَقُولُ يَا لَيْتَنِي اتَّخَذْتُ مَعَ الرَّسُولِ سَبِيلًا
And the day when the wrongdoer will bite at his hands, he will say, Oh, would that I had taken a path with the messenger.
يَا وَيْلَتَى لَيْتَنِي لَمْ أَتَّخِذْ فُلَانًا خَلِيلًا
Ah, woe to me, would that I had never taken so-and-so as a friend.
لقد أضلني عن الذكر بعد إذ جاءني وكان الشيطان للإنسان خذولا.
He indeed led me astray from the reminder after it had come to me, and Satan is ever a deserter to man in the hour of need.
Brothers and sisters, previously we started discussing the 27th to 29th verse of this chapter. In the previous program, we mentioned a fact regarding these two verses, last two verses discussed, are having two positions of negation and verification. At first, it is said that the pagan or the wrongdoer is really regretful. Ya waylata laytani lam attakhidh fulanan khalila. I should have not taken such a one for a friend. And then in this verse, it is continued. He indeed led me astray from the message. If he were very far away from perpetual happiness and faith, he would not regret so much. But he had been near it. And it seemed that there was only one step from being happy. But that stubborn, biased, dark-hearted friend, apparent friend, returned him, thirsty from the spring of life water. That friend took him to the whirlpool of misery. The Quranic word dhikr has got an extensive meaning in this verse. لَقَدْ أَضَلَّنِي عَنِ الذِّكْرِ بَعْدَ إِذْ جَاءَنِي. He indeed led me astray from the message after it had come to me. This word message or zikr has extensive meaning, and it includes all divine verses that are in the heavenly books. And moreover, it includes anything that makes man awaken, alert, informed.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran. By Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
And in the end of the verse, the Quran says, وَكَانَ الشَّيْطَانِ لِلْإِنسَانِ خَذُولًا. And the Satan fails to aid man, because Satan always misleads man, leads him to dangerous places, then leaving him wandered. Satan goes after this job, leaving people with their own problems and difficulties after he has misled them, and then choosing someone else as a victim. The interesting point regarding this ending part of the verse is the fact that the Arabic word khadul is used. We must note that this Arabic word khadul, كَانَ الشَّيْطَانُ لِلْإِنسَانِ خَذُولًا, is an amplification form which means the one who abundantly fails someone when he must when he is most in need. The reality of khadhul is that someone hopes for another person's help, but he deserts him just in the very sensitive moments, in the need situation. With this last sentence of the verse saying, وَكَانَ الشَّيْطَانُ لِلْإِنسَانِ خَذُولًا, is said by Allah as a warning for all oppressors and the deviated people. Or it is the rest of the statement said by those who are regretting on the day of resurrection. The commentators have mentioned two commentaries. Both of them seem to be in line with the meaning of the verse. But it seems to be that this is the Almighty Allah's word. It is more consistent if we consider this ending part of the verse as the Almighty Allah's words. Anyway, concluding these last three verses we discussed, we understood how important the role of friends are in our destinies, and they are the factors that cannot be underestimated. Most of our thoughts and moral attributes are formed through our friends, and this is what we must be aware of if we want to be the true wayfarers to the station of closeness and mercy of the Almighty Allah. We will discuss this issue more, God willing, in the next episode. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of RIB English Radio, now we invite you to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Hamza Sodagar.
We express our condolences to the Imam of our time, first and foremost, and to all of you brothers and sisters and all the lovers and followers of the Ahlul Bayt, Salamullah Alayhim Ajma'in, on the occasion of the Shahada of Imam Al-Kadhim Musa ibn Ja'far Abu al-Hasan salawatullah wa salamuhu alayh. Imam al-Kadhim salamullah alayh lived at a very critical time. So Muhammad Kadhim kept the movement of the Ahlul Bayt alive, the political movement of the Ahlul Bayt alive. And not only that, he strengthened it, added more momentum by adding more people to the movement, more followers, and more energy to those followers. Salamullah alayhi. One of the tools that Imam al-Kadhim, Salamullah alayhi, used, one of the tools that Imam al-Kadhim used. Imam al-Kadhim knew that the move to overthrow the regime at this point is not going to happen during his lifetime. That was clear. There's various signs that this was the case. Imam al-Sadiq, Salamullah alayhi's time was different. He knew and it was evident that the Umayyads are going to fall because of their work. The difficulty was to keep it on track, and because of certain conditions that he tried and he did what his responsibility was, but some of his followers didn't, and therefore it did get deviated and it went a different direction. But Imam al-Kadhim knew that, for partially what we mentioned, that there won't be a strong enough popular movement against the Abbasids in support of the Ahlul Bayt to overthrow the regime. He knew that. Yet we see he made very strong remarks against the regime, against Harun, against his predecessor. Harun was not the only Abbasid Khalifa during the time of Imam al-Kadhim. There were one or two other Khalifas after Abu Ja'far al-Mansur, one or two other Khalifas that ruled. Imam al-Kadhim, Salamullah alayhi, was open in his stance against the government. Imam al-Baqir, Imam Zain al-Abidin, Salamullah alayhima, which in certain ways their time was similar to the time of Imam al-Kadhim, in that the movement against the Umayyads was not a strong movement. They were starting it, and so it wasn't at a point where it was going to reach its goal. When they started that movement, they didn't have those, they didn't take those open stances against the Umayyads in a very provocative way. They didn't do that. This doesn't mean they didn't take public stances against the Umayyads. They did. That's recorded in history. However, the way those public stances were taken, you can do it in a provocative way, and you can do it in a non-provocative way. From my reading and my understanding of Imam al-Kadhim, Salamullah alayhi, which manifests in the prison imprisonment of the Imam. We're going to talk about that, inshallah. That's part of this tactic of the Imam. Imam al-Kadhim's speech, where he mentioned what he mentioned, the wording he used was provocative. In other words, he used dangerous language against the system. He was open in not criticizing the system, not alluding to the injustice of the system, alluding to it needing to be removed and a different government, a government of justice being established. He didn't allude to those things. He was very specific. Sometimes he would say it clearly and openly in the presence of the Khalifa. I have not seen something like this from other imams. In this way, it says that after hearing and knowing, of course, that Imam al-Kadhim, Salamullah alayhi, was involved in this movement, the government knew very clearly, the topic somehow of Fadak had come up. The Khalifa was trying to show, put up a show rather, not show something genuine, put up a show, that he is trying to be a just ruler, giving back to people what belonged to them that was usurped, that was taken by previous governments and has not been returned yet, One of those was Fadak. Obviously, Fadak was taken from the Ahlul Bayt, from the Lady Fatima to Zahra, salamullah alayha. And now in one setting, Imam al-Kadhim was asked and was told, where is this Fadak? Just tell us where this Fadak is that this big deal is being made of. So we can return it and get this whole thing over with. Imam al-Kadhim, salamullah alayhi, responds, I don't think that you would want it. I'm paraphrasing here. You would want me to tell you what the borders of Fadak are. He says, no, and he says, please. And the Imam gives him the borders of Fadak. And the borders of Fadak are the borders of the region that the Khalifa is ruling over. In other words, he openly, in the presence of the Khalifa, to the Khalifa, tells him that what I want you to give me is your reign, your authority, your government. Step aside. And that's what he said. He says, well, if that's the border and I want to give you that, then I have to no longer be the Khalifa. The Imam said, well, I told you. This is very provocative. He managed to anger Harun so much for Harun to imprison him in those harsh ways. Why did Harun imprison him and his followers and torture them so harshly? It's because he was angered by them. He didn't want to. They had a strong following. Why would Harun want to get people to hate him? He doesn't want that. Well, the only reason is because Imam al-Kadhim, salamullah alayhi, is speaking, acting, doing things in a way where it really bothers him, it really angers him. Initially, he doesn't want to kill him, so he imprisons and he wants to break the Imam and he wants to break his followers, and so they torture them in their chambers, in the prisons, in the dungeons. It is evident from my reading that the Imam knew of this. He intentionally took those positions. He intentionally provoked the government. In other words, he spoke in a way that he knew was going to be leading to his imprisonment. This is what I mean. Not that he wanted them to imprison him, meaning he did, al-ayadu billah, activities. He was involved with activities that he did them only for him to be imprisoned. So he did things that were actually not good, but the good of it is because the objective. No, that's not what we mean. He spoke openly, harshly, provocatively against the government, knowing that he's going to be imprisoned, with this goal in mind, that type of language strengthens the movement. That type of language gives courage to the followers. That type of language gives that extra incentive to the followers.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Azim Alimun Halim Hakimun Mateen Ghafur Shakurun قيوم رؤوف صابر مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Martyrdom of the Seventh Imam. In the name of God, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Salam and welcome to the program. We offer heartfelt condolences to our listeners on a very doleful day, which the faithful commemorate every year on the 25th of the month of Rajab. Today is the tragic day when the Prophet's seventh infallible heir was martyred in Baghdad through a fatal dose of poison during imprisonment by the usurper Abbasid regime in 183 AH, corresponding to 799 AH. He reposes in eternal peace in the sprawling twin-domed gold-plated shrine of Qazimain, where people flock day and night and pay their respects to him by saluting him in an appropriate manner, such as, "Peace on you, O representative of Allah and the son of his representative. Peace on you, O the decisive argument of Allah and the son of his decisive argument. Peace on you, O light of Allah in the darkness of the ignorant world. Peace on you, O guide who showed the right path. Peace on you, O symbol of religion and piety. Peace on you, O treasurer of the wisdom of the prophets. Peace on you, O vicegerent of the guardians of the past. Peace on you, O depository of the manifest revelations. Peace on you, O possessor of certitude knowledge. Peace on you, O treasury of the messenger's knowledge. Peace on you, O murdered martyr. Peace on you, O son of the messenger of Allah and the son of his successor. Peace on you, O my lord Musa ibn Ja'far." What you heard were phrases from the special ziyarat, or standard form of salutations, for the seventh infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Named Musa in honor of Prophet Moses, peace upon him, he acquired the epithet of Qazim, or the patient one who refrains from anger, in view of the vicissitudes of life through which he passed during the 35 years of his mission. Born in Abwa between the holy cities of Mecca and Medina in the year 128 AH, corresponding with 745 AD, he was only 55 years old when Harun, while immersed in pleasures in Raqqa in Syria, sent a fast-paced emissary to Baghdad to instruct the despicable jailer, Sindi ibn Shahak, to kill the Prophet's heir in such a way that no sign would remain of any foul deed on the body of the victim. It is an irony of Islamic history that charlatans, debauchees, apostates, and infidels masqueraded as caliphs and made Muslims forcibly obey their will by distorting the tenets of religion, while the divinely designated heirs of the Prophet and the inheritors of the pure and pristine Sunnah Wasira, that is, the practice and behavior of the Messenger of God, were persecuted. After having martyred Imam Musa Qazim, peace upon him, the assassin had the court officials testify with signatures on a long scroll that no foul acts had been done and the venerable prisoner had died on a natural death. Sandidan left the corpse on the bridge over the river Tigris unattended. Were the people of Baghdad Muslims? Did they adhere to the practice and behavior of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny? Didn't they know that the corpse was that of the son and successor of the Prophet's 16th infallible heir, Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace upon him? Then why didn't they oppose the Abbasids? The answers to such questions are obvious. Muslim conscience had died long ago, ever since the caliphate was hijacked at Saqifa Bani Sa'da in Medina by a group of usurpers, while the Prophet still lay unburied and while his bereaved Ahlul Bayt or immediate family members whose authority and purity God himself has vouchsafed in the noble Quran were busy in the state of mourning performing the last rites of the seal of messengers. So there is nothing to be surprised at the attitude of self-styled Muslims, whether in the past, when the chosen ones of God were brutally martyred, or at present, when innocent and defenseless men, women, and children are either mercilessly bombed by Saudi aircraft in Yemen, or torn to pieces by bomb blasts in Afghanistan, triggered by Daesh terrorists, who shamelessly called themselves Muslim. The faithful, however, remain undaunted. They adhered firmly to the God-given political and spiritual rights of Imam Ali, peace upon him, as proclaimed by the Prophet, and they provided burial to the seventh Imam in Baghdad while assisting his son and successor Imam Reza, peace upon him, who miraculously came from Medina to conduct the last rites of his father. These days as well, despite the dastardly acts of the Takfiri heretics and their terrorist masters, the Americans, the faithful are flocking to the shrine of Imam Musa Kazem, peace upon him, in Qasimain, north of Baghdad, in millions to pay homage. It will not be out of context to cite a passage from Imam Musa Kazem's lengthy sermon to his disciple, the master theologian Hisham ibn Hakam, regarding God-given wisdom and authority. O Hisham, the commander of the faithful Imam Ali, peace upon him, used to say, "No one should sit in the forefront of a session except those who can answer when they are questioned, speak when others cannot, and have the most satisfying opinion. He who does not enjoy these three characters and allows himself to sit in the forefront of a session is surely idiot." These are mind-stimulating words indeed. The passage that you heard instantly turns our attention towards not only the Mosque of Kufa, where Imam Ali, peace upon him, the Prophet's divinely designated vicegerent, used to enlighten minds and souls, but also towards the fate of those in history who ended up becoming eternally damned idiots by making the fatal mistake of usurping the caliphate and sitting in the place of the Ahlul Bayt. Thus, Imam Musa Kazem, peace upon him, as an heir of the Almighty's last and greatest prophet, spared no efforts to spread the truth, even if it meant speaking directly to a tyrannically murderous caliph, such as Harun, who longed for lasting glory, but ended up in the bowels of hell with no sign on earth of his rotten grave, while his victim reigns supreme from Baghdad, where the Shia and Sunni Muslims alike salute at the site of the seventh Imam's shrine with the words, "Ya Bab al-Hawa'ij," or "O Gateway of Boons." His manners were impeccable. Never was he heard speaking roughly or harshly to anyone. Even in the most unpleasant situations, he was seen smiling and bearing the pain gracefully. This was in accordance with the saying of his ancestor Imam Ali, peace upon him, that the faithful keeps his grief confined in his heart while a smile on his face. It is an irony of Islamic history that such a noble person was harassed, imprisoned, and martyred. Here is another passage from the Ziyarat of Imam Musa Kazem, peace upon him, as food for thought. I bear witness that you carried and delivered that for which Allah has commissioned you, protected that which was entrusted to you, prescribed that which Allah has made lawful, forbade that which Allah has made unlawful, made clear the divine rules, studied and interpreted the book of Allah, exercised self-control for the sake of Allah, strived in the cause of Allah, leaving no stone unturned till the inevitable came unto you. I have taken refuge near your grave. Your Zari is my sanctuary. You are my advocate before Allah. I am a friend of your friends. I am averse to your enemies, well acquainted with your rank and the guidance you adhere to, mindful of the depravity of your opponents and of the waywardness in which they are wandering.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, thank you so very much for joining us on today's brand new episode of The Lantern. I don't know what the reason is. And it's so much so that we constantly come across memes and jokes and reels and whatever about this topic on social media. And I'm somehow glad that it's more openly talked about in a very lighthearted sort of quality. Maybe it will raise more awareness in the next generation, because the past generation is a lost cause to a certain degree. But in certain cultures, the amount of toxic talk down children receive from their parents is just ridiculous. I am in no position to tell parents how to raise their kids or tell cultures how to culture. But again, just from personal experience, when I compare the different families that I see around me from different backgrounds, and the way the parents and the children interact with each other, the words that are used. God, words are so, so, so important. The way we talk to each other, our choice of words, sometimes even the tone we use. And I'm just telling this to remind myself, because I can be so salty and so sassy sometimes in the way I speak. I go back and I think about it in my head, and I was like, dang, I was such a jerk. And so many ahadith and riwayat and ayat warn us about this matter. Let's listen to a story about this, about choice of words and the impact they have on other human beings. And we'll be right back.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, dear brothers and sisters, salamun alaikum. So welcome to this episode of Lantern, Wranglers and Strangers is the title of today's story. Many years ago, there were a group of brilliant young men at the University of Wisconsin. The group of men seemed to have an amazing creative literary talent and were extraordinary in their ability to put their literary skills to its best use. These promising young men met regularly to read and critique each other's literary works. These men were merciless while they criticized one another. They accepted the most minute of the expressions and offered tough and even mean criticism to each other's work. These meeting sessions became arenas of literary criticism, and the members of this exclusive club called themselves the Strangers. Not to be excluded to the opportunity to level up their literary skills, women of the literary interest in the university started a club of their own, one comparable to Stranglers. The members called themselves the Wranglers. The member of the loop, too, presented their literary pieces in front of each other, but the feedback from members were much more softer, more pathetic, and more encouraging. Every effort from a member, even the more feeble one, was encouraged by all. After 20 years, a university alumnus was doing a study of his classmates' career when he noticed the huge difference in the literary accomplishments of the Stranglers and the Wranglers. Among all the brilliant young men in the Stranglers, none had made any significant literary achievement, but the Wranglers have several successful writers and some renowned national literary talents. The talent and the education between the two groups were almost the same. The Stranglers strangled each other while the Wranglers gave each other a lift. The Stranglers created an atmosphere of contention and self-doubt, while the Wranglers brought out the best in each other. The greatest success we'll know is helping others succeed and grow. That was the famous quote by Georgie Scott Reid.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
I don't know if you guys remember, but a few years back, maybe 10, 20 years back, this Japanese scientist did a little experiment with water molecules, and he wrote encouraging, loving, caring words onto, you know, a sample of water, and he wrote bad, violent, hostile words onto another sample of water, and then he checked the molecules under a microscope after a while, and then he saw that the water that was spoken to nicely and gently, the molecules, well, not the molecule structure itself, but the shape of it, were more harmonized and beautiful, while the water that was abused, you know, verbally abused, became ugly under a microscope. I don't know if you guys remember that. I'm just saying that we're 70%, 65% water, so imagine the effect of words on us. But the human soul is obviously more conscious and intelligent than water molecules. And we pick up the smallest frequencies and radiations in a person's words, especially as children. Their souls are so pristine and their minds are so clear that the smallest gesture, we think that, oh, they're just kids, you know, they just let it slide. They don't remember, but no. They're so impressionable, and their souls, because it's so fresh, we leave prints on it without realizing. Now they're happy, bubbly, perky, chirpy little kids because they don't have to pay bills or turn in theses or pay mortgage. But once the going gets tough, they will reveal all that stuff that was boiling up on the inside, all those internal prints we left on them. And then, you know, the end result is this really bitter, depressed, insecure society with the confidence level of a turnip. There's a hadith from Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam, and I feel that I understand this hadith, the gravity of this hadith, the older I get, that says the human tongue is like a wild animal. It's a sabu', and if you let it loose, it will devour and shred people apart. And I've seen so many people who have zero control over their tongues, and they literally just say whatever the heck it is that's on their mind, and not necessarily in a bluntly honest, awkwardishly cute sort of Luna Lovegood kind of way. It's savage, and it's just downright rude and impolite. And it is so important. One of the ways of training the nafs and the ego is for us to have control over our tongues and to have higher awareness and mindfulness regarding the words we choose, our vernacular, our vocabulary, and the tone in which we say certain things to certain people. And of course, there's the hadith that really keeps you safe, where it says, if you don't have anything good or useful to say, just stay quiet. Or the other hadith from Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam that says, إِذَا تَمَّ الْعَغْنَ غَسْلِ الْكَلَامِ, when the intellect becomes complete, the words are shortened. In other words, when you're smarter, you talk less. What does that say about me and my career, really? I get paid to talk. It's horrible. Anyway, the point is, please be careful of the things you say. I'm saying this mostly to myself. It's really, really, really important to think before we speak, because the consequences of those words are dire, are so profound for us and for the person who's at the receiving end. And we will only realize it when it's too late, unfortunately. Thank you for being with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.